Hey, I'm right over. Oh, it doesn't work. There it is. I'm right over here. Now I'm over here. Now I'm over here. See, it really doesn't make any difference. That's what I was told, ladies and gentlemen. We tried to, you know, last week, if you were listening last week, this show was sounding like this for a while, wasn't it? Now I'm in control of that, see, but last week, apparently nobody was. And then there was an attempt, you see, ladies and gentlemen, to resend the broadcast for those stations which broadcast it on a delayed basis, you know, so that they could hear it in real stereo. And I've been informed this morning upon arrival at the Le Show Dome that somebody made the command decision here in my absence. Oh, no, it sounds just fine. Let's not bother to resend it. So if you were wondering why you didn't hear the guitar part on Back in the USSR, I know you probably weren't wondering that. I was. That's why somebody decided, some nameless Le Show Gnome in my absence decided, no, sounds fine. Why bother? So from the why bother cap, no, from the nobody will notice capital of the world, Southern California. Hello, welcome to Le Show.
Tried but can't find refuge in the anger. I walk the mystery of the curve. Five colors blind the eyes. See the world inside. Amazed alone. I don't mind if I am getting nowhere. Circling the seat of truth. Telling a soul illuminates. The sky is changing. I'm unknowing, knowing. As every sign of new life waits. Five colors blind the eyes. See the world inside. Opening my hands. Closing wounds I can't find refuge in the anger. I walk the mystery of the curve.
bills for my head. Can't buy the book. No one's listening, but I guess you could try whistling this. You say you're tired. Liquid is water. But you'll succumb now. Is a stroke you'll buy. I'm the best that you know. And every time you think of me, I hope you think of true romance. And every time you want to leave, you give us both another chance. Warmest welcome, violent stranger. Well, he said, come here as he pushed me down. Impossible to do. In high heels, walking into walls. Do you ever wonder if you're here at all? Try whistling this.
Life is dull, it's nothing but one big lull. Then presto, you do a skull and find that you're reeling. She sighs and you're feeling like the toy on a string. And your heart goes ring-a-ding-ding, ring-a-ding-ding, ring-a-ding-ding. How could that funny face that seemed to be commonplace project you right into space without any warning? Don't know if it's morning, nighttime, winter, or spring. What's the difference? Ring-a-ding-ding, ring-a-ding-ding, ring-a-ding-ding. She takes your hand, this captivating creature, and like it's planned, you're in the phone book looking for the nearest preacher. Life is swell, you're off to that small hotel, and somewhere a village bell will sound in the steeple, announcing to people love's the loveliest thing. And the bell goes ring-a-ding-ding, ring-a-ding-ding, ring-a-ding-ding. She grabs your hand, this captivating creature, and like it's planned, you're in the phone book, hunting for the nearest preacher. Life is swell, you're off to that small hotel, and somewhere a village bell will sound in a steeple, announcing the people love's the loveliest thing. And the bell goes ring-a-ding-ding, 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 ring-a-ding-ding.
That's nice, Max. Hello from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the show. Because it really doesn't, you know, in the long run, it doesn't make any difference. It's just a small planet in a very big universe. So who cares, really? Take the rest of the day off, is what I say. From Southern California, ladies and gentlemen, where we had the pleasure of hosting one of the great, I think one of the classic all-time television events this week. We got to watch a, I'm sorry, two people died, but we got to watch a house burn down live. And so many, I think so many of us have wondered, what's it like just to sit and watch a house burn down? And this week we got the chance. Some of you got the chance to share that with us through cable news networks, but we really here got the whole experience from the moment that before the first tear gas grenade was lobbed right straight through to poking through the charred ruins. And the mind goes back to the SLA house, this Symbionese Liberation Army. These were the people who kidnapped Patty Hearst children. Back in the 70s, and there was a shootout at that house. That was on live television. But in this case, the shooting was over, I think, before the television cameras arrived. And you can imagine the dismay and the disappointment in TV newsrooms all over town to have missed the shooting. But then the house burns down. Live. Ladies and gentlemen, It was an observation I made several years ago, given the opportunity to view several insurance fires that took place completely surrounded either by sand or water, so there was no danger of them spreading, that if you remove the element of danger, or even if it's there in small doses, fire is really man's first and still greatest entertainment. You can have Michael Jackson and everybody he wants to have show up at Madison Square Garden. It doesn't beat watching a house burn down. I'm sorry. We'll check the ratings to see if the city agrees with me, but I bet it beats all those car chases, which have been the unbeatable ratings getter on local Los Angeles television for some time. Just any car being chased by any cop for any reason. I gotta watch. I gotta see what happens. Well, the question here was, would either of the adjoining houses catch fire? Neither did. Now, all right, so on a sheer entertainment basis, you had to dig it. But now the questions. What was going on here? What was the deal? Why was there shooting? The ostensible reason was a warrant was being served, a search warrant. You got to burn a man's house? He's got to shoot at you? What was going on? The vaunted, I'm going to use that in quotes, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. These are the people that a lot of the folks holed up in cabins in Idaho have warned us about. And here they came to the peaceful little community of Santa Clarita. Peaceful. Did you see the long shot of that community when the helicopter camera pulled back? I don't think a single street goes through. It's cul-de-sac world up there. Anyway, so all of a sudden this happens. Trying to deliver a warrant to a guy on charges of impersonating a police officer and possessing a weapon in violation of his probation for a felony conviction. Impersonating a U.S. Marshal and being a felon in possession of a firearm. Those were the ostensible reasons for going there with a warrant. The late James Beck, opened fire rather than the ATF guy said, well, we'd visit him before. He was nice. And in the confusion, and of course there's always confusion when there's live television, some of the shots fired in response to when James Beck, the man holed up in the house, some of the shots fired back after he opened fire were fired at the wrong house. Said one lawman on the scene, I could hear one of the deputies say, is it the house with the Explorer? And another guy says, no, the one next to it. Didn't need to add, of course, that the house with the Explorer already had enough problems. It had an Explorer. Didn't need to be shot. It was acknowledged by a spokesman that deputies did fire at the wrong house, as well as the house on the other side of Beck. So both of the adjoining houses, though they didn't burn down, have bullet holes to show for their day on live TV. But, you know, you lose a house, you gain a house. Actor-comedian Martin Lawrence has put his Westlake Village home on the market at $2.65 million. Lawrence, who has owned the home for just about 3 years, purchased a Beverly Hills area estate on 2.8 acres for just under $13 million in January. He didn't list his Westlake Village house for a while because he was busy refurbishing his new home before moving in. The six-bedroom, 14,000-square-foot house in the Beverly Hills area. You know what that means, ladies and gentlemen? It's not in Beverly Hills. It's in the area. It was built in 1991, the Westlake Village home, in a gate-guarded community. It has five bedrooms and about 6,800 square feet, built in the 19... Oh, by the way, the fire guys responding to the blaze said it was a little tough getting in there. Because of the way the neighborhood was laid out. I don't think they had speed humps, but they have plenty of cul-de-sacs. The five bedrooms and 6,800 square feet built in the 1990s with extensive colonnades. The house has an estimated 9,200 square feet and is on a corner lot of about 1.2 acres. You can buy the colonnades. The home also has a motor court.
I hereby find the Volvo guilty.
Four-car garage, 26-foot-high foyer with a spiral staircase and two crystal chandeliers, a master wing with a private staircase, a pool, and gardens. How much does he want? 2.65. Wow, just for the crystal chandeliers alone, it's a bargain. Oof. Okay. And Tom Cruise has been living in a West Side estate leased at $55,000 a month. Hollywood sources say... The home has eight bedrooms. Tom, can I come over? Babe. Plus guest accommodations in less than 7,000 square feet. Why, that's less than 1,000 square feet per bedroom. The property also has a pool and a tennis court. It was built in the 1920s, but is said to be in immaculate condition. Hidden from the street, the estate has appealed to such former celebrity tenants. This means they were former tenants, they're still celebrities, as Eddie Murphy and Elton John. It was once leased for as much as $75,000 a month, a source said. So, Tom, you got a bargain? He was living, of course, in Pacific Palisades with his wife until they announced their separation. He temporarily rented a suite in the Hotel Bel Air for maybe somewhere between $675 to $3,000 a night. Okay.
You got it.
He's down. He wasn't leasing at top of market. That's all I care about. That's really not all I care about. I care about seeing not his house, but just a house burned down on live. I had guests in the house. They sat down. Started to watch. A radical animal rights group backed by Sir Paul McCartney is set to picket schools in Britain, telling children that milk will make them fat and spotty. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, which I think exists only to give fodder to talk show hosts on radio. Look what they're doing now, ladies and gentlemen. Can you believe what they're doing now? And that's 3 hours in the can right there. It's opposed to dairy farming on moral grounds and tends to hand out 100,000 Pokemon-style cards to young children after they return to school this week. The cards will use cartoon characters such as Spotty Sue, Windy Wendy, Flemmy Phil, and Chubby Charlie. Does Fox own those? Not yet. To suggest that if children drink milk, they can expect the same problems. One card says milk might make people intolerant of you because many people who drink it suffer from, pardon us, wind. The campaign comes, as some experts predict, that Britain faces a shortfall in milk production because so many cows have been killed due to the foot-and-mouth epidemic. The PETA campaign is backed by celebrities such as Ringo Starr. That's half the Beatles, Ringo Starr and Paul McCartney. Half the Beatles want us to stop drinking milk, ladies and gentlemen. Oliver Stone and Pamela Anderson. I want to be at that meeting. Mr. Starr, please sit down. Mr. Stone, you have the floor. No, Miss Anderson, you have the floor. The guys, sit down, please. The government, British government, recommends children drink milk every day. Susie Leather, deputy chairman of the Food Standards Agency in Britain. I don't know. I tend to believe Susie Leather. I don't know why. She says milk is the most nutritionally complete food, containing nearly all the constituents of nutritional importance to humans. Some head teachers in Britain have reacted angrily to the PETA strategy of targeting children rather than parents. If there is a milk shortage, it could help highlight the PETA campaign. The vice chairman of the Milk Committee of the National Farmers Union said the problem would soon become acute. Spotty Sue, Windy Wendy, Flemmy Phil, and Chubby Charlie. Ladies and gentlemen, if this was talk radio, we could spend the next 3 hours just fulminating about that. But no. No, we're not going to do that. We are not. The American Medical Association is mounting a $1 million campaign. This is a wonderful kind of note about the world we live in and what it costs to live in it. The AMA is mounting a $1 million campaign to educate doctors about the AMA's ethics guidelines. It has ethics guidelines against accepting gifts from drug companies. You know that doctors, for years, these guys called detail men, that the drug companies, pharmaceutical companies, excuse me, hire. And they basically go visit doctors and try to convince them of the value of prescribing certain medications. And gifts have been known to pass between the detail men and said physicians, which might, in the view of some, tend to influence the doctors to want to prescribe said medications. So the AMA has guidelines against this. Most of the funding for the $1 million effort to educate doctors about the ethics guidelines comes from pharmaceutical companies. Nine large pharmaceutical companies are contributing $675,000 to help pay for the campaign, which is aimed at med students, physicians in training, and those detail men, as well as practicing doctors. The ethics guidelines do allow doctors to attend company-sponsored conferences and to receive textbooks or drug samples that will directly benefit their patients, but they are advised against accepting individual gifts of more than minimal value. You know, cufflinks, not a big TV. Not a big TV. Alan R. Nelson, a former AMA president, defended the AMA's decision to accept money from the drug industry. The idea that somehow that money is tainted is not accurate in my view, he said. Kurt Krenke, president of the Society of General Internal Medicine, said he thought the decision to accept drug company money for the campaign was reasonable as long as the companies had no say and how the money was used. And, of course, we all believe that, don't we? The AMA guidelines state doctors should not accept gifts if there are strings attached. For instance, if the gift is an incentive or reward for prescribing a company's drug. But Lisa Biro, a researcher at the Institute for Health Policy Studies at UC San Francisco, says research suggests company gifts influence doctors' attitudes and behavior. Even the smallest gifts make doctors feel more favorable towards a company. Companies often offer golf clubs, golf club covers, or golf balls. Apparently, doctors like to play golf. Who knew? And finally, ladies and gentlemen, that I did know. I'm sorry. I don't mean to feign ignorance. I did know doctors like to play golf. Of course I did. Finally, at the top of the week's news, ladies and gentlemen, Europe is all a Twitter because the euro is coming. I know it's not going to make, with this economy, it's not going to make any difference anyway. But the euro is coming. The single currency, which has been basically just a mythical currency up to now, that is to say, if you went to any country in Europe, oh, let's say Italy, and you looked at prices of something in a store, they would be listed in lira, which is the Italian national currency, and then also in euros. But you could only pay in lira. I think you could, in your credit card, you could pay with euros, but those are mythical euros. You couldn't hold a euro in your hand. Well, that is going to change as of this January, when the euros, actually euro banknotes, euro bills, come out. And at that point, I think, or soon thereafter, you have to use euros. So this week, the euro banknotes designs were revealed, the culmination of a six-year design competition. The notes range in value from 5 to 500. They show bridges, windows, and gateways from seven periods of European architecture. However, adhering to the specific terms of the competition, the designs stay away from showing any actual bridges, windows, gateways, or monuments. Domingo Solans, a member of the executive board of the European Central Bank, said the images were chosen because they symbolize the spirit of openness and cooperation in Europe. All seven denominations depict a bridge on one side, symbolizing unity. Each bridge represents a different period of European architecture. Classical, Romanesque, Gothic, Renaissance, Baroque, and Rococo, iron, and modernism. On the other side, the notes show open windows and gateways in an attempt to suggest accessibility and transparency, values the European Union is attempting to convey. The images are the idea of Robert Kalina, a graphic artist from Vienna. He scanned into his computer images of famous architectural monuments, such as the Rialto Bridge in Venice and the Neuilly Bridge outside Paris. He then used his computer to obscure all recognizable signs of the monuments. These are tourist attractions, ladies and gentlemen, you might recognize, but not after Robert Kalina and his computer got through with them. Antti Heinonen, a Finn, and the European Bank's director of banknotes, said it was important that the monuments were imaginary so that the euro could become a real pan-European currency. That's right. You need imaginary monuments to have a real currency. We wanted to avoid the impression, he said, that these were real places. But it's real money. Please, 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 please believe them and turn your lira in as soon as you possibly can, won't you? Thank you so much.
If your whole life somehow wasn't much till now, and you've almost lost your will to live. No matter what you've been through, long as there's breath in you, there is always one more time. And if your dreams go bad, everyone that you've had, that don't mean some dreams can't come true. Funny about dreams, just as strange as it seems, there is always one more time.
So if there's a heart out there looking for someone to share, I don't care if it's been turned down time and again. And if we meet someday, please don't walk away, 'cause as always, one more time, there is always one more time.
This is Le Show from Southern California, where we've had no blackouts, no rolling black, no brownouts, no grayouts, no... Everything's fine. Look at the lights. They're blazing in here. A few grocery stores have dimmed lights on the produce, which has allowed them to sell fine produce, but otherwise everything's been great here. But that's probably because who knows why. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, before that, when we thought we were going to have power outages this summer, and you know the state had dictated that there would be rolling blackouts, which might last as long as 90 to 120 minutes in each area, some businesses applied to the Public Utilities Commission for exemptions from those outages, those proposed outages. According to the commission, to qualify for an exemption, applicants must demonstrate that an interruption like that would pose a significant threat to public health or safety. Here, ladies and gentlemen, are some of the companies that applied for that waiver. Seven Lakes Country Club, A Better You Plastic Surgery Medical Group, All Eyes on Me Hair Studio, Anheuser-Busch Sales of San Diego, Baseline What a Steak, Beverly Hills Liquor and Deli, Big Burrito Kingdom, The Boom Boom Room, Burger King, Busy Bee Quality Cleaners, Cash It Here Incorporated, Church of Scientology Mission of San Francisco, College Soap Opera 24-Hour Laundry and Deli, Krusty Tart Bakery, Doty Donuts, El Taco Loco, Expert Nails, Fantastic Burgers, Five City Swim Club, Gardana Bowling Center, Gucci America Incorporated, Happy Teriyaki and Sandwiches, House of Blues, Imagination Gymnastics Center, Jehovah's Witnesses, Lorton's Fresh Squeezed Juices Incorporated, Los Gatos Swim and Racket Club, Mr. Ralph's Cafe, Pacific Coast Chocolates, Pinoy Pinay Filipino Fast Food Restaurant, Poochie's Bathhouse, SeaWorld. Too warm for you there, Orky? Sick Dog's Tattoo, Snowy Pines Christmas Trees, Stevie G's Primetime Pizza, The T-Shirt Mart, and Uptown Touchless Car Wash. No word on who of all of those did get their the waiver, but of course we root for all of them. Ladies and gentlemen, in Southern California this week, I believe, or next week, we will be playing host to the Latin Grammy Awards. Now, why there has to be a separate... There's a talk radio topic for you. Why do we have to have a separate Grammys for the... But the Latin Grammys, until a couple weeks ago, were scheduled to be this year in Miami. A lot of Miami officials had worked very hard to get the Latin Grammys there. And then when some anti-Castro Cuban exiles got into a controversy with the Grammy people over how close to the camera positions the protesters would be allowed to protest, the Grammy people said, we're so out of here. Ladies and gentlemen, Miami, Florida. Now, this program is heard in Tallahassee and a couple of other cities in Florida, so I'm not saying this behind anybody's back, but they couldn't run an election. How do we expect them to run the Latin Grammys? You know? Yeah. We see this week that you can't help but cheat when you go to New York. The kid who pitched, the phenomenal pitcher for the Little League team from the Bronx, who was getting all that media attention, of course, 2 years over the limit. The guy who ran his team had pulled this scam before, was let back into the Little League because I guess their computer was down or something, and so they've been forced to forfeit all of their games from this year that they won. I want to know, ladies and gentlemen, where we have a missing. You know, there's missing people all over the news. Of course, the Chandra Levy thing, about which more in a moment. But I think a more serious missing person story, which has been totally ignored by the media. Where is Colin Powell? Have you seen the Secretary of State? Now, it was announced that he was not good. We know where he's not. The only way he's been in the news recently is by announcing where he wasn't going to go, which was to the UN conference on racism in Durban, South Africa. He announced it was announced in his name with some ceremony that he was not going to go there because the United States felt it was going to be a debacle due to certain language and certain resolutions. But Colin Powell didn't go on television to announce that or to explain it or to say, no, look, we care about racism. We care about the problem. We just don't think this is the appropriate. Nothing. Just he's not going. And where is he? Previous administrations, the Secretary of State has been a fairly public spokesperson for the administration's foreign policy. They've let Condoleezza Rice out every once in a while to talk on the Yak shows. But I think the next time Gary Condit is interviewed, somebody, maybe Connie, has to ask him if he had any role in the disappearance of Colin Powell, because this is getting serious. I believe that. Ladies and gentlemen, last week I opined on a couple of things that bother me about the news business. This week, well, I think I will take the opportunity to do so again. There is a tradition in the news business that you say, if you're a reporter, you say where you are. Whether, you know, it began in the newspaper business, remember those? With a thing called a dateline, which is, if you wrote a story, it said at the top of the story where you were writing from. So the reader knew exactly how close or how far from the story you were, you the reporter. Somehow in the television and radio world, that tradition has fallen away. I believe it started when the TV networks were going to save money by not having bureaus in foreign countries anymore. They figured out that you could just fly all the film or the tape from wherever into London and have a correspondent in London voice narration and just say at the end, this sounds out for CBS News, and not say he was in London, not point out that he's not in Dubrovnik or Bosnia or Chechnya, but just, you know, kind of let you assume that he was there because he didn't say he wasn't. And now this pernicious practice has spread to, oh my God, no, yes, National Public Radio. Listen, and you'll hear more and more NPR reporters, quote, reporters, doing a story and not telling you where they're reporting from. They'll just say at the end, okay, I'm in NPR News. Where? Where are you? Hello? I noticed this, there's a reporter, I think, in San Francisco who does economic stories sometimes, and they just, I guess, feel that, well, you shouldn't be in San Francisco if you're doing economic stories, and if you are, we shouldn't cop to it. And this week, a correspondent for the network, whom you may recall from earlier broadcasts, had earned the sobriquet on this broadcast of the metaphorical big fat pig for refusing to abide by a seat-sharing agreement at the O.J. Simpson civil trial with the host of this broadcast because she said, this seat is for real journalists. She did a report on the surrender of Nikolai Soltis, the accused mass killer of several members of his family. He surrendered in Sacramento. He surrendered at his mom's house. And said reporter didn't close her story by saying she was in Sacramento. Of course, she was in L.A. Did her reporting, I guess, by reading the wires and watching CNN the same way the rest of us did. I just think, you know, that it's okay to be far away from a story. It's okay not to fly up and, you know, go on the scene. And, you know, who cares? But just tell us what's going on. I think that's, I hate to sound naive, but I think that's what real journalists do.
Tonight, more people Geraldo couldn't get. Gary Condit's mailman and a woman who shaves his body continue to Congressman's defense exclusively. Plus your phone calls. It's all next on Larry King Live. Good evening. I'm still almost as excited as I was when I recorded that intro. We got a great show for you tonight and tomorrow night. This is one for the time capsule. Art Bell for the full hour. We recorded it last week at his home in the Nevada desert. By the end of the hour, I thought I was a Martian. Tonight, in our San Francisco bureau, exclusive, a man who has delivered the mail to the home of Gary and Carolyn Condit in Ceres, California, for the last 7 months, Stephen Aguello. And with me in a Los Angeles studio, a masseur, and she would like me to pronounce it Shavur, Shavur. You and I would say Shaver. To some very prominent people in the political and entertainment worlds, Beverly Lakewood. Beverly, You shaved Gary Condit. The man couldn't shave himself.
Good evening, Larry. Where I shaved Congressman Condit, he couldn't shave. Let's put it that way.
Okay, so you're not talking upper lip between the chin and the neck where I'd paid somebody to shave me.
Well, we can talk after the show. But no, Larry, as far as I know, and all the time that I worked with him, Congressman Condit shaved his own face, and he shaved it very well, although, of course, I wasn't spending all that much time looking at his face.
And he engaged your services for what, health reasons, or what was the story there?
Mental health reasons, yes.
And all the time that you knew him?
Since right after the 94 election.
Did this Chandra Levy thing come as a surprise to you?
Oh, totally, Larry. Mm. This is a fine, very private man. A man of great discretion. I mean, to say he doesn't belong on the intelligence committee, for example. I mean, this man keeps secrets the way I think we all wished the CIA could keep secrets. And to see him being hounded by media people, walking to his office, walking to a hearing room, being asked by Connie Chung if he killed this Levy girl, Larry. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have been more heartbroken if that had been my son up there. Although in my case, I don't happen to have a son.
And as far as a dark side that the public now thinks they saw on the Connie Chung program...
Larry, there is no dark side to Congressman Condit. Mm-hmm. And unlike most of the people who've come on your show this week and said something like that, I mean it literally. He's a very fine, light flesh color all the way around.
San Francisco Stephen Aguello, the Condit's mailman at their district residence. Steve, during the 7 months that you knew him, what was Gary Condit like as a postal recipient?
All right, I'm having a little trouble with your earpiece here, Larry, but I think I got the gif of your question.
Okay.
And Gary Condit was just the perfect customer. You know, if you sat down and you listed the ideal person you wanted to deliver to, you'd be describing Mr. Condit.
Okay, now most of the time you were delivering to his house, he's not there, right? He's in Washington?
Well, that's right, although he would come back every few weeks, and it would be, "Hi, Steve," you know, if I saw him. Yeah. But the people who were at the house, whether it would be his wife or other times someone who was working for him, obviously, he sets the tone of how they're going to deal with me, with the FedEx person, with the United Parcel person, you know, with all of us in the delivery community.
So would they give you a coffee, a bagel?
No, it's nothing that they gave me parfait. It was just the respect, the cheerfulness in coming out and signing if I needed a signature. the lack of any kind of threatening animal on the premises.
Sure.
You know, the whole package, it just made for a very pleasant delivery experience.
When you heard all the charges and read all the stories, mm-hmm. Steve, mm-hmm. what did you think?
I just thought, that's not the Gary Condit I know. That's not the guy who comes out, gets the magazines out of the box personally, leaves me an extra signature card so his wife doesn't have to come out and sign anymore. I mean, that, Larry, that's the kind of thoughtfulness and responsibility I'm talking about.
You didn't know Chandra leaving?
Her folks' house is a long way from my route.
And you would have no way of knowing about this affair if there was one, which everybody seems to think there was.
Mr. King, my job is to deliver the mail, not to inquire into the personal lives of the people I serve. I think you can learn a lot about folks just by the way they handle their mailing lives. And Mr. Condit, I thought, is just not the kind of person who chops up a young girl and buries her at sea or anything. Not even close.
Well, in fairness, I don't think anyone has accused a congressman of doing that.
Oh, compare. There's been some things going through the mail that have been literally that bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, Mr. King, that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Pine Falls, Montana. Hello. No, I'm sorry. That's not a corner. That's a headline. That's come up at the top of the hour. I was reading the wrong thing. Homer, Alaska. Hello.
Hello, Larry. I have a question for Beverly.
Yes?
Did you shave him with a blade shaver or an electric?
Good question.
It depended a lot on mood.
Yeah, that's it?
In both my massaging and my shaving work, I'm not a slave to routine, Larry. I really calibrate what I do to the mood of the client. The congressman was, I'd say, about 60% of the time in a blade vibe.
Did you know Mrs. Condit? She wasn't sick, was she?
She had her thumbs, if that's what you mean.
Larry, I know Mrs. Condit very well, I think.
Yes, Steve.
Only a couple of catalogs, many charity pieces, sales circulars from some of the nicer places in San Francisco. Lovely, lovely woman.
Let's try to get one more call in. Hilversum, Holland. Hello.
Great show, Larry.
Thanks. You know, Friday night, the cast of Punky Brewster together for the first time in 15 years.
I'll be watching.
Hey.
Larry, a question for Steve.
Yes?
Any publications that the congressman received that that made you raise your eyebrows?
Now that's getting into the personal stuff.
No, it's okay. Yeah. If magazines aren't in wrappers, it's no more private than buying them at the newsstand, I think. He did get motorcycle publications, you know. Yeah. Not every congressman does that. Some farming publications. This is a pretty rural area.
I was going to say,
although we don't grow cattle around here, and he did get some livestock magazines that made me scratch my head at first.
Beverly, is this a guy you feel loyal to?
Oh, absolutely, Larry. More so now than ever. If I got a call from the congressman saying, can you be over here at midnight for an emergency trim, there's no doubt in my mind I'd be there for him. The sad thing to me is that it's just a shame that the people in the media couldn't get to know him in the way I do.
By shaving him?
By knowing him. Yeah. He's a warm man, very intelligent, and most of the time, very, very smooth.
We'll take a break and be back with you, more of your calls for Beverly Lakewood and Steve Arguello. And don't forget, Thursday night, the best panel in the business debates whether Gary Condit should resign from Congress or kill himself. Stay with us.
Your galoshes on your feet. Comes a snowstorm, you can get a little heat.
Comes love, nothing can be done.
Comes a fire, you know just what to do. Blow a tire, it might take a sec or two.
Comes love, nothing can be done.
brother, if you've ever been in love. That's all, sister. You know what I am speaking of. Comes a headache. You can lose it in a day. Comes depression. See your dentist right away. Comes love. Nothing can be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, the momentum of the reality television binge continues to mount, and the excitement around here is because the Fox show Love Cruise is now, shooting is now underway, and here's a report from the producer of the show on the contestants' first day at the Love Cruise.
The day began very early for the cast today. They had to be ready in their lobbies of their hotels to be taxied to the dock. They then were brought out on a launch to the Mandalay. They played a game of flash dating, 6 minutes dates with each person of the opposite sex to get to know each other. They followed that up by choosing their partners. For the next 48-hour period. They're now off swimming, and later tonight they'll be undergoing their first hot seat. So it's a busy, full day for them.
Wow, from flash date to hot seat.
Yeah. We're literally 6 hours into this, and already it seems like we've got people hot and heavy for each other. There's a lot of touching going on. There's a lot of looking into each other's eyes. It looks like we're going to have some romance, so we're really excited.
As they used to say, why do you think they call this place Fox? They really did. I'm not making that up. Ladies and gentlemen, there are other boats you could be on. If you're a would-be refugee, I recommend staying off boats that have the names of American cities. Some 60 years ago, there was a boatload of would-be refugees from Europe called the St. Louis, which tried unsuccessfully to dock at, among others, many American ports, and was turned back famously to return to Nazi-dominated Europe. Now the Tampa, with about 450 would-be asylum seekers from Afghanistan, lovely place this time of year, Afghanistan, has been held in limbo in Australian territorial waters for a week. The Australians refusing to take in the people on the Tampa, possibly because there's an election campaign coming up. The plan now is to take them off the Tampa, put them on a non-Australian ship, don't you know? Ferry them to East Timor. From there, they will be flown to the island republic of Nauru. Some will go to New Zealand, but some will go to the island republic of Nauru, which is described in a British paper today as 8 square miles of guano. Welcome. An opposition senator in Australia said the decision would be viewed negatively by other countries. Quote, this turning away of people on the high seas is going to do enormous damage to the reputation we've just built up through the Olympics, he said. On the other hand, some people can get into Australia. Bill Clinton will be there this week, raising $1 million for a children's hospital in Sydney, and making another appearance in Melbourne for a speaking appearance at a casino. And I'll be there too. Or I'll be on an island made of guano. I'm not sure. Have to look at those tickets again. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week in full stereo over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, over the USAN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through Armed Forces Radio on shortwave, where it's all mono, at WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it'll be just like getting off an island made of guano, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? All righty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. You going to send me an attachment? No, you're not. That's right. Thank you. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Oh, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, one more thing. Aren't you glad we spent all last election campaign talking about the Social Security lockbox, which we're now being told is imaginary? Hey, let's go buy one with some euros. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as almost mythical, almost imaginary, but the home of the homeless.